Okay, quick note here. The article that I'm discussing in this episode has been updated further since I recorded this episode. So if you want to read the final thing, go check it out in the Substack. Here we go. Okay. I'm going to proofread this post that I'm planning on putting up on my Substack, taijireality.substack.com, in the next day or so, and I figured this might make an interesting episode. So I'm going to read it. I might have something to say about it as I'm talking through. I might make some corrections. I might change some things. Who knows? Who knows what's going to happen here? Why did I start thinking about this? Well, basically because instead of doing this podcast, I've been involved in this Kennedy campaign. And if there's one thing that really hammers home the law of unintended consequences, it's politics. So, why is it so difficult to try to do something good? I think that's kind of what I was thinking about. So here it's entitled, When Good Actions Produce Bad Results, and vice versa. Subtitle, It's Bad Karma to Not Believe in Karma. Then I have a nice little image that I made, because it's good to have an image in your blog posts. Is Substack a blog? I don't even know. Okay, here we go. The original meaning of the word karma contains the meanings of action, effect, as in cause and effect, and fate. I think I should just say the word karma, right? The word karma contains the meanings of action, effect, as in cause and effect, and fate. Actions create consequences. They cause effects. Our fates are inextricably shaped by actions, not just our own actions, but also those of others who influence our lives, whether we know them or not. So there's a commonly thought of meaning of karma, and we're kind of trying to hammer into what it really is about. And if you look at the root in Sanskrit, those are the translations. Action, karma. I always thought of it as just being action, but I looked it up and it's also sometimes translated as effect or fate. And you can see how all those things are linked. That's the point of the first paragraph. The law of karma claims that the fruits of action are good if the action is good and are bad if the action is bad. On first glance, this seems blatantly false. No good deed goes unpunished could easily be the maxim for the ages. Assuming you're paying attention, you've seen how commonly evil deeds are richly rewarded in this world. Such things would appear to violate the law of karma. So, why don't the things that we think are good produce good results? And why don't the things that we think are evil, why are they not punished? Why do they succeed? Sins of prior generations are visited upon subsequent generations. Individual acts of goodness cannot succeed if they are performed within the context of a vast history of evil acts. Proclaiming the sanctity of liberty, freedom, and human rights is farcical and fruitless if you live in a world that routinely commits its energies to rapacious resource extraction, economic warfare, psychological warfare, and overt-covert warfare. These things accomplish nothing except the degradation of human life. Many millions have suffered profound physical, emotional, and spiritual damage merely to enrich the powerful. Or those who aspire to power. I can understand how this might sound somewhat naive, because we kind of take it for granted that the world contains all these horrible things. I mean, to the point now where we don't even object. Some of us do. Some of us still complain and protest when our nation is dropping bombs on innocent people. But no one is surprised by it, and it's something that a lot of people just sort of accept as being, this is normal, this is what's always happened, this is how it goes. And maybe that's true. Maybe that's just sort of at least a thread within history where that kind of thing is happening all the time. Or maybe we're living in the Kali Yuga, you know, the cycle of history where these kinds of terrible things happen. And maybe there were enlightened ages where no one would think of doing this kind of stuff just because the consequences are so terrible, not just for the people who it's being done to, but for the people who are doing it, which is precisely what's happening in this country right now. You know, our country is experiencing the karma of the terrible deeds that the country has been doing. So, I mean, it's literally, if you look at what's happened in terms of the migrant crisis, for instance, it's the policy of the Western nations throughout South America, Africa, Middle East, that have created the conditions where so many people are fleeing their nations to try to find a better life elsewhere. And those people have now found a way into many of the Western nations, if not most of them, and chaos is ensuing. So, yes, the sins of prior generations, the sins of the father visited upon the son. That's the original quote. I didn't want to get all wrapped up in that, kind of make it more general, because it's not just the fathers, it's the previous generations, right? And of course, it's not just the sons, it's the daughters as well. So, sins of prior generations visited upon subsequent generations. So, in a more ideal, let's return to the text now, let's say an enlightened age, if there ever was such a thing, the law of karma functions beneficially if and only if a society believes in and enforces its law of reciprocal cause and effect. Good deeds are rewarded and evil deeds are punished. What could be simpler, right? When good is rewarded and evil punished, people behave accordingly. Conversely, when a society fails to reward good and punish evil, society becomes corrupt. When the law of karma is systemically inverted, evil is rewarded, good is punished, and the law of karma is once again proven correct. That seems counterintuitive, right? But let's continue. There is something that I wouldn't mind commenting on, which is this question of whether or not a good policy could stand. I mean, in a way, what's being said here is that a good policy cannot stand in the face of a world that's abiding on evil policy. Right? So, in a way, you could say there's an element of where there's no choice here. So if we're living in the Kali Yuga, in the time of darkness, then people are abiding by their own sense of law. They're not abiding by the law of karma. And so the world becomes ever darker. And those who attempt to do good are punished for it. It doesn't work. You can't succeed, because when evil takes hold, it has no restraints. You know, a good policy has restraints. There's certain things you won't do. And that's why institutions are always corrupted in the Kali Yuga. Because actors who have an interest in overtaking institutions, if they have no restraints on their behavior, they have an advantage over those who do. And so, you know, you can see how that whittles away the capacity for anyone to have a winning strategy with a good strategy. And this is essentially the multipolar trap in game theory. The multipolar trap, which is something that I think... I can't remember the name of the guy right now. The multipolar trap is basically when you have a set of rules, advantage can be found by breaking the rules. And the first person to do so gains the upper hand, and all other players are then forced to also break the rules in order to remain competitive. And so this becomes the race to the bottom, which is precisely what we see happening, what's been happening. For how long? I don't know. I mean, I guess if it's the Kali Yuga, it's been happening for quite a while. So, getting back to our narrative here, I'm saying the provocative statement here is that when the law of karma is inverted, when people don't abide by it, evil is rewarded, good is punished, and the law of karma is again proven correct. Why is that? Let's find out. What goes around seems not to necessarily come around, but this is only a temporary condition. When the choice is between the lesser of two or more evils, the result is always an evil one. Eventually, the law of karma asserts itself, like gravity does to a thrown ball. Evil actions cause misery, anger, despair, and fear. These effects take time to propagate, mercifully affording time for repentance and redemption. But if evil proceeds unabated, the good's only remaining recourse is to leave this world to preserve its goodness. If it stayed, it would no longer be good. Leaving an evil world is a form of mercy, a good in itself. God's love is the ultimate good, experienced by those who would rather die than knowingly commit evil. And I put a footnote there. Why did I do that? Oh, yeah. I originally had this in the main text, but then I just thought, well, to be provocative, we might call this the rapture. That's what I said. Yeah. So the idea is that if one is good, you'll be taken out of the world before it becomes so horrendous that no good person could stand to be in it. It's sort of, you know, the only the good die young type of thing, although it's really not, it's a very strange phrase if you think about Billy Joel's song, Only the Good Die Young. It really is only the young die good, maybe? Or under certain conditions, this is you can't write lyrics like this, but under certain conditions, if you want to be good, you're going to have to die. Because the things you'd have to do in order to stay alive would be evil. That's just obvious on the face of it. It's nearly impossible to determine whether or not a given course of action is good. One can have great intelligence, accurate, wide-ranging information, the best intentions, and still be traveling the road to hell. Ordinarily, we are lucky to have moderate intelligence, halfway useful information, and questionable intentions. That's how the road to hell became a highway. The effort to be good is a hopeful act of faith with no guarantees. If the spreading of evil continues unabated, the world gradually becomes completely evil. Those who won their reward by evil acts are then surrounded by the fruits of evil: misery, cunning, violence, horror, betrayal, falsehood. They are imprisoned in the world they co-created and cannot escape. Their actions sprang from a belief that the material world was all that mattered. Hence, they will struggle to survive at any cost, no matter how miserable their existence becomes. And I did a footnote at existence, because it's a very interesting word. But let's save that for after the rest of this text, because we're almost to the end. So, they'll struggle to survive at any cost, no matter how miserable things get. They cannot admit the possibility that there might be something greater than the body to preserve. Which, incidentally, is a lyric from a song I wrote. They are therefore condemned to experience the karma of the deeds that brought them to their position. In the end, what went around came around. It just took time. So, as the world becomes more evil, and the acts that are necessary to stay within this world become more evil, then one is essentially surrounded by evil, which is the punishment for committing evil acts. It's just so obvious, right? These are the dark roots of karma that illustrate the wisdom and practical necessity to observe the law of karma. It is better to die than to violate this law, because if you don't live by the law of karma, then you're creating a more evil world. Right? There are a few ways to avoid hell on earth. You know, and I'm not sure that anything can be done at this point, but it's not impossible, right? Because the pen is mightier than the sword. And sometimes ideas take hold. This is an ancient idea. It's been living with us for millennia, I think. And there's no reason why it couldn't see a resurgence. It's just so simple. But it would, you know, it's difficult to imagine how we return to this just incredibly elegant and simple insight into how to keep a certain level of decency in life. It's so simple. It's so simple and yet almost inconceivable when it comes to the world that we're living in today, which I think is why so many people are on the verge of a mental breakdown. There are a lot of people who are basically just, they're relying upon mood-altering substances, whether prescribed or self-prescribed, to make it through the day, to keep their minds from just exploding with the desperation, the horror. You know, there's a lot of different types of circumstances that people find themselves in now, but even just bearing witness to some of the terrible things that are happening in the world, like what's happened recently in Ukraine and Gaza. That's horrible enough, never mind being in it. But then, of course, being in it now, you know, millions of people around the world have been suffering in conditions similar to what's happening in Ukraine and Gaza now. And there's a terrible thing happening in Sudan that no one ever talks about. It's, you know, these are things that it goes beyond a kind of stress mode. It folds itself into the human being. You know, the people are just forever changed, like the basic nature of who they are. And then quite often they'll go and try to live somewhere else. We're back to the kind of migrant thing, right? And the contrast between the horror of the situation that they were escaping and the kind of complacency and just lost nature of the societies that they will find themselves in is just too much. You know, it's no wonder that periodically people in that circumstance will just go on a rampage and just start stabbing people. It's just, it shouldn't be a big surprise. So, you know, when it comes to a basic prescription on how things might be turned around, it would require basically, you know, that everyone would agree that we would live by this just most basic rule. It's not going to happen, right? Well, we'll see. Who knows? So the word exist. Let's talk about that. We've talked about this before. The footnote that I wrote is, to live is to be, to survive is to exist. The word exist comes from ex and ist. Ex means out of, ist means being. When we exist outside of being, we are separated from God. When we find our connection with God, we experience being. Being is the feeling of the interconnection between all things. All things. I'll just say, all things come and go. It's the acceptance. It is the acceptance of the impermanence of the body and the eternality of life. It is a position of humility that gives one an experience of the cosmos in all its grandeur. when you're placed into the position of trying to preserve yourself, survival mode, right? It's you against whatever it is that threatens you. And so the separation from everything is felt acutely. Maybe this is why Jesus says, do not resist evil. You know, turn the other cheek, that whole thing. Because in resisting evil, you become separated from the creation. You become separated from God. And you enter the fight. And that intensifies the fight. And the more intense the fight gets, the more destruction is wrought on the human soul and on the biosphere and on everything, right? And now, you know, because we've built up the technology, and, you know, you have to remember that most technology is developed for warfare. Most of the big advancements in technology happened because of warfare. Indeed, even something, you know, I think I read something once that most musical instruments are the byproduct of warfare technology innovation. So, for instance, the violin came from the bow and arrow. You know, vibrating string, it makes a nice sound. Right? So, when the war is over, you've got all these bows around. Some people start strumming on them. And then they take the same kind of... you know, you want to be able to have precision with an arrow, right? And so knowing what the right pressure is and how the wood can withstand that pressure, it's a similar set of issues when it comes to constructing a stringed instrument, right? So we've gotten to the point now where the technology is so advanced that if we escalate the conflict, we do run the risk of getting into a nuclear exchange, which would be just incredibly devastating. It might ultimately be what has to happen in order to clear things out and kind of start again. I heard recently that apparently in Chernobyl now you have strains of species that are resistant to cancer. It's sort of the opposite of what happens initially after a big exposure to radioactivity. But it would make sense that because the radioactivity is so strong there, then only the individuals that have some resistance to cancer would really thrive. And so they would be the ones who are procreating. It'll be interesting to see what other kind of characteristics they have, right? But yeah, I think that a lot of us are in this mode, and I feel it quite often myself too, of just trying to survive, just existing, you know, make it through the week, and then hopefully, you know, have a little bit of time for contemplation and what have you, to restore your soul and return to the spirit. But it's difficult. It's difficult to transition. I saw an interesting clip the other day. I can't remember the name of this artist. She's sort of a famous singer, I believe. And she's doing an interview saying that it's an interview where there's an interaction with the interviewer who's saying, "You're a musician." She says, "No, I'm not a musician. I make music." So the interviewer says, "Oh, so you're a musician then?" She says, "No." No. It's a funny little clip, right? And this guy, Mono Neon, who's this incredible bass player, he takes that clip and he plays the vocal of it on the bass, and then he orchestrates it, and just incredible, kind of an incredible piece of music, really. And there's another little section that he inserts of the interview where she's saying, "I don't think... That's ghetto." I'm not exactly sure what she's referring to as ghetto. I don't think. That's basically what it is. Like, I don't think. That's ghetto. I don't think. I think in a way, that's what it takes to just stay connected. You know? That's what occurred to me when I heard that. I thought, you know, maybe that is actually completely what it takes. Just completely, all you do is you just trust in God and don't think about it. I have never been, I mean, at moments I've made that decision where I know I have to make some kind of a decision. I'm making a decision that's definitely not the safe decision. And so then it's like, okay, I'm trusting in God and I'm just going to, you know, but in general, I try to think things through before I do things. It just seems like, you know, a very basic, reasonable thing to do. But in listening to that and in thinking about this, because when you think about things, you are sort of existing because you're stepping outside of yourself for a little while to observe things. You're kind of not in it when you're in the thinking process. So you have to find like a safe spot to think, right? You can't just be out in the middle of traffic or something. You can't like do something dangerous while you're thinking. You know, you need quiet time away from something in a safe location. So I've always thought that intelligence is a kind of nervous disorder. That's another song that I wrote. And that thinking is a hazard. And that it typically produces, well, you could say, you know, results that are not anticipated. You know, you give it your... So it's sort of like the quote, I think it's... Eisenhower. Plans are worthless, but planning is everything. Something like that. So we do our best to try to, you know, make things happen the way we want them to, but it just so rarely goes that way that it really calls into question the entire thought process. I don't think I have the discipline to let go of it. But I can see that that's what might make the most sense. And if things really get out of control, it seems like the only strategy. Because if things are out of control, then you just there's no point in trying to control them. And in some respects, I'd say I am dreading having to live in a world that's like that. But I'm anticipating that that's the world that we're going to be living in soon. So that's my brief offering. I apologize for not being more committed to the Assembly of Silence in this period of political engagement. I have a bunch of stuff I'd like to work on, but I just don't have the time to do it. But this seemed like it was worth doing for some reason. When I read that, I feel like some of the commentary would be good to have in the article. I always feel like when I write something that there's something missing. But the amount of work it would take to figure out, I mean, I have to listen back and figure out what I didn't put in there. And so I guess you could say this is sort of a value-added version of the article. And I might do this with some of the other articles that are on there and that may be on there. So this might be a recurring feature. Highlighting some of the stuff on Substack. If you like this kind of thing and you want to support it, you can do so at the Substack. taijireality.substack.com, or you can go to patreon.com/taijireality, or you can send some PayPal to taijireality@gmail.com. And with that, I wish everyone the best of luck in these difficult times. I'll check in again soon. Adios.